the internet. You're busy. Let's do this. Welcome to the Games Week Decides podcast. This is the podcast where we decide everything happening in the world of video games so you don't have to think for yourself. I'm your host, Jeff Grubb. With me is
Mike Minotti.
We're going to talk about games. We're going to talk about the news in games. Mostly, I'm just wondering, how you doing, Mike? You doing okay? You holding on there?
I'm very anxious and upset with myself today.
Yeah.
Everyone's
getting PS5, so I'm just wondering what's going on with you, man.
Yeah, right. What's going on? I don't know. I will say it's my fault, but I don't get it. I'm like, embargoes are so weird. Well, I'm expecting a package tomorrow. I'll say that. but it should have been here today. But if I hadn't messed something up, it would be. Soon enough. But like, I am literally like planning tonight at like 9 p.m. just to take like my sleeping pill gummy and just like knock myself out so I can hurry up and wait. It's like Christmas, right?
Yeah, your weight mate. Yeah, take that weight mate.
Wait, what's a weight mate?
That is the Tim and Eric reference.
Dang it. I'm usually up lifetime, on those.
He's got his Lifetime Achievement Award on Friday and it's Tuesday and he just can't wait. So he takes weight mate and he sleeps through all those days. And then Tim takes too much weight mate and it gives him, like, it erases his brain. It's a good episode. You should watch
it. Funny, yeah.
Yeah, it's good stuff.
Pain I can get into.
Yeah, that pain I can get into. Absolutely. I'm definitely feeling left out, like, because you're getting the PS5, Dean's getting the PS5, and you guys are handling that. And it makes sense. Like, I've got a lot of work. I'm going to be doing the Xbox Series X review while you guys are doing that. But also, I have, like, the 3070 here that I need to review in the same exact time, and the new Ryzen chips I have to review at the same time. So it's like, it's a good thing, and I need to just relax.
Yeah, I mean, I asked them about you, and Sony said Jeff Grubb can go to hell. So
no,
it's not looking good.
Yeah, no, I get that. I don't blame them. I don't blame them for that at all.
They didn't actually say that. Anybody? Yeah, but I'm gonna. Don't worry. I'm gonna try to step into your. You did such a good job with the Xbox Series X coverage. You're probably making my job harder now because expectations are so high. So
well, you know what? I believe in you, and I'll help you.
That's mistake.
When it comes time, you know, you just honestly, Mike, just play the damn thing, tell me how you feel, and then I'll just have you on the video and we'll talk about it. I'll ask you questions.
Okay,
it'll be good. Yeah, it'll
better
be like,
not
hey,
be tough
how,
questions how, or I'll how, walk out after like halfway through the show or something. all right,
you said it was going to be a beautiful interview and it wasn't, Mike. All right. First, I want to thank everybody for joining us. You get more from Mike and me at gamesbeat.com. If you have something to share with us, you can email the podcast at games+podcast@venturebeat.com. That's the plus sign. Or you can get us on Twitter. It's at gamesbeat for the site. You can reach there. Mike, I think you still look at gamesbeat.com's ads, right? If we get at mentions, you check those out. Okay.
Do not look at those. No, absolutely not. Thank you to
Carlos Ayin, who is insane in the rain music on YouTube for the use of our theme song. And if you are listening to this on like the website Player Widget or YouTube, we have an audio version of the show that you can subscribe to. You can find that, wherever you listen to podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, wherever. And if you like the show, rate us wherever you're listening. It helps. So who's that retweets me? Is that just Jason doing that?
Yeah, I think that's Jason who does that. Yeah, I do not handle. Yeah, for a while, that was part of my responsibilities. Yeah. It was all that social media stuff, and then thank God it's not anymore. Yeah, I do not handle that.
Yeah, it's not fun. I don't blame you.
Nobody wants to engage with like the website account anyways, ever.
That's true.
It never works like that.
No, yeah, absolutely not. And I almost think it's better that they view us as individuals and stuff because it's how we approach this stuff. So yeah, that's better. All right, Mike. So I, the first thing in the news story is that PS5s are going out, and Dean did get his.
He did get his, right? Yeah, he did. Yeah, he has it.
Oh, so they sent us two, and I think that's about as much as we could say, right? And Dean,
we're allowed to show a picture of the box right now. That's it. That's all you can do. Okay, that's all you can do right now.
Right. So with those two, we'll do coverage. I mean, I don't know what we're allowed to say. I guess I didn't really look at the embargo, but I guess we know that people are getting them. People are taking pictures.
They're
of the
real.
Box.
They're
real. Yes, they're real. And I think it's a good sign that they're starting to get out there. It shows that, you know, Sony's confident, just like Microsoft. And I think people were like, oh, Microsoft's getting out so far ahead of time. Why isn't Sony? And I think the difference was Microsoft was making a big deal out of backwards compatible stuff. So they didn't have to wait for next gen games to be finished.
Right.
Sony had to wait for next gen games to actually be done so they could give us something to play, because that's what they're talking about. That's what's important to them. So I was never worried, but I still think it's a good sign that
I was never worried.
A couple weeks out. Yeah, right.
It seems like normal timing. I mean, if anything, the Microsoft thing was surprisingly early, right? And, you know, they're even kind of clear that what you had wasn't really final hardware. It was just about, but it was certainly, that would be interesting circumstance, right?
They made these consoles for E3. That's exactly what this was. And so they had oh, we have 20, 30 of these things sitting around that we know already. Should we just send them out to people? And that's exactly what they did. So yeah, they that makes sense. Like they're like, well, let's pivot. Let's figure out what we can do with this hardware that we made that is just going to go. We're just going to put it on a shelf for years if we don't do anything with this. And, and so they have that preview period's coming to the end for Xbox. And now we are definitely moving ahead into the review stuff. So, we'll have that for everything very soon. I'm looking forward to a couple solid weeks of talking a lot about new hardware, and then I'm going to close my eyes for about 2 weeks and just sleep.
We'll call that Christmas.
Yes, we'll call that Christmas.
Well, you have kids, so you'll be plenty busy then too, huh?
Yeah, God, yeah, we'll see. All
Christmas is canceled this year, kids. Deal with it.
Yeah, it's for real. Tired. We're still not sure about even Halloween or anything like that. We're not sure what it's going to look like.
Yeah.
All I know is I want to rest and take it easy and not get COVID, but we'll see.
You get 2 out of 3.
All right. Yeah, we'll see. Yeah, if I'm lucky. The next story I have here is Hideo Kojima is making a new game, and just like the first story, I don't know what else to say about that.
I tell you what, this was the first kind of slow news week I feel like we had in forever, right? Man,
I agree.
Nothing super crazy, aside of a weird Twitter thing, which of course always happens. Nothing super crazy this week.
Right.
Yeah, of course Hideo Kojima is making another game. Like, Death Stranding is weird, right? Because, I assume it did, okay. I don't think it, sold gangbusters. It didn't sell, a Metal Gear Solid, but more than anything, I think it did what Sony wanted it to do, right? This kind of weird prestige game, sort of, that got people talking and, whatever.
Yeah. It filled in their
release. Hey, Jeff, your mic's a bit low, the chat's saying. Mine is fine.
I just adjusted it, yeah. Hopefully it's better now.
You screw up?
No. I'm sitting a little bit further away from the mic than I used to.
Scooch it?
I got to really scooch it, but then I guess I can just turn the camera. There we go. All right. Yeah, so I agree. Of course he's making something new, and I think I will be surprised. I will be interested. I won't be surprised if he's working with Sony again.
I wouldn't be surprised. Do you think it's literally Death Stranding 2? I didn't beat that game. Is that a cliffhanger? Does that game lend itself to a sequel? Just from what I played, it seems like an idea that was fine to explore once and maybe do something else new, but I don't know.
I don't know. It feels like maybe they should do something else first and then come back to that. Because continue to build up your studio, maybe do something that's more mainstream, and then let the cult status of Death Stranding build up more and more over the years.
Because
it seems like the kind of game that people continue to come around on. The people that like it really like it, and they swear by it. And I think that'll build up over the years to the point where this is actually Hideo Kojima's best game. And people,
I don't dislike Death Stranding, to be clear. I just really like some of the Metal Gear Solid games as well.
Right. Yeah. And and Death Stranding is a fine game. And I think, I haven't played it on PC, and I bet if I go back, I bet I'll end up liking it even more there. Having the extra graphical features and stuff. But yeah, I think they'll do something different first, I would imagine.
All right, Jeff, I have to say this now because now I see it. Is that a Series S behind you? Why is there the thing above your head that looks like a Series S? What is that? What is this?
No. No, it's not. I don't know what you're talking about.
Oh my God.
What are you talking about?
Oh my God, you goober. I was like, that's not actually it. That must have just been.
You could have just not said anything, Mike, or
it wasn't actually it. I assumed it was something that happened to look like one. Wow, who caught that?
I had to put some stuff up on some shelves because my kids were playing over in my office and I was afraid they were going to break stuff.
David,
it was just some books.
Wow, Jeff, I can't believe people discovered your papercraft replica of an Xbox Series S.
Yes, I've been getting very much into origami is exactly what's happening.
Wow, that's
here.
Crazy. Yeah. Hey, we got a super chat from Christian Borak. I'm probably saying that horribly wrong. Sorry. Will the Series X look good on my 4K TV, even though it's only an HDMI 2.0? Love the show and the genuine info. Hey, thank you.
Yeah, thank you so much. I'm using it on, I'm primarily using it on an HDMI 2.0B TV. And that TV can do 1440p at 120 hertz. So I still get some of the benefits of like the faster games. Your 4K, like most games probably still aren't going to run at 120 hertz. And your TV might not even do that. And you're going to get the benefits of the extra power in other areas. You just might not get 4K. You definitely won't get 4K 120 hertz at the same time over that output signal. Not the biggest deal in the world. I don't think, don't go out and rush and buy a new TV right now, especially if you're happy with your TV. But also don't not get new hardware because I don't have the right TV. That shouldn't be the reason to hold you back. You will eventually get a new TV, and this hardware will just be ready for it. You're just kind of future proofed, and that's a good thing. So yeah, don't get hung up on this kind of stuff. Not at all. It's going to be about the games eventually. And I think I would focus on, does it have the games you want to play? And are you happier getting like 60 frames per second solid in like Sekiro instead of like 45 ish or whatever? If that's important to you, yeah, then this hardware is going to be great no matter what.
You know, Jeff, I really want to hear about the amazing 8K abilities of the PlayStation 5 as notified on the box.
Yeah, no, to be clear, I hate 8K on everything. People are like, oh, you're just picking on Sony again. I'm like, no, I've definitely said this about every time I've seen 8K because 8K just makes me mad. In general, especially in gaming, because we're probably not going to get many 8K games, if any, but whatever. 8K for everything on a TV, on any TV, unless your TV is literally like 250 inches, which I don't think TVs get that big, it's just dumb. It's a waste of resources. It's dumb. I hate it. It's literally just marketing. We could be talking about so much other stuff. Like Dolby Vision, or even just a really good HDR 10 signal. Way more important still than goddamn 8K. But even NVIDIA, like the 3090 exists and like, man, this is so much power and it doesn't make sense to have just like slightly better graphics at 4K, I guess. So let's just say 8K. And then they put some people in front of an 85 inch OLED from like 4 feet away. And like, isn't this amazing in 8K? And it's like, it would have been 4K. They couldn't tell even at 85 inches, but that's just me. That's just my personal hang up.
What's next?
All right, what's next? Yeah, you're right. It's a slow news week. So Halo Master Chief Collection is getting optimized for the Xbox Series X. I don't think this is too big of a surprise. And optimized, I've clarified now, it is the optimized word. Whenever Microsoft uses optimized, it does mean that it runs natively on the Xbox Series X and S. And that means you can't like put it on a hard drive, and it means it's not like, oh, this is just the backwards compatible version. No, they have updated the code and recompiled it for the next gen. But it's going to be 120 frames per second in both the campaign and the multiplayer. It's going to have better split screen, up to 4K resolution on Series X, they said, and it's a free update coming November 17th. NBA 2K21 has unskippable ads in it, Mike. How angry does this make you?
Well, since I don't play this game, not very. It is a strange game for it, though, right? Like, super premium annual release that's making $1 zillion already. That is maybe not the game to go ahead and like throw that in there.
But also, people buy it no matter what,
right? So
you can get away with murder, and so it is kind of the game to put it in there, isn't it?
Yeah,
in a very cynical way,
right? Plus, there's really no competition for basketball games like at all. So, what are you gonna do? Go play the other one?
Yeah, we've brought this up on the show months ago, but like I know EA is desperate to get back and competing there, and they're going to try some really, they're gonna go hard back at 2K because 2K sort of spoiled some of the stuff that they were going to do with their stuff. But they have to actually execute on it, so we'll see. And they have to get the NBA to agree, and the NBA is feeling very much like, why would we kind of give EA any sort of leeway when we know that our golden goose is 2K? So, yeah. So we'll see if there's ever going to be.
Right. I mean, it's so weird because like going directly at them is hard, but we know that like this, like they try to bring back NBA Jam. I think feel like 10 years ago kind of didn't really take. So like, I don't know if you can maybe bring back NBA Street or if people care. I feel like people keep trying to like revive those old, like arcade sports games and they just don't really take anymore. Right. Like the
Blitz. Yeah, NBA Street Volume 2.
Man, that's a good game.
One of the best games ever made, I think.
Such it a good game.
It's in the top 100, I
Serving
think,
it up. Sure. Dinner served.
Yeah, man. And it's like a good fighting game, but with like, it was much more approachable, much like more broad because people understood the rules of basketball more. And it was a little, it's like slower pace because you're moving a ball around. And so it's inherently not like, you have to read what your opponent is doing in a nanosecond. You have a few seconds to understand what's going on. That has to still work, right? Why doesn't that still work? I mean, I guess maybe it just doesn't work financially, but whatever. But it seems like it would perfectly fit with like
an. Yeah, I think part of the problem is that there's kind of this conception now that those aren't like big AAA games anymore. Whereas NBA Jam was like the biggest game ever. Now it's like, if you make one of those, it better be a $20 like digital game. You know, and like you can kind of tell, like for a sports game, I think, you know, people have an expectation of really high end production values. So when suddenly you're, you know, everything looks indie-ish for a sports game with, you know, licensed athletes, I don't think it's a great look.
Yeah, I agree. Here's one that I think we could have predicted, but I guess I can't believe it went bad so fast. Facebook is kind of messing up Oculus in a real rough way. So people are getting their Oculus. What is it? The Oculus Connect?
No, Oculus Quest 2, right?
Thank you. Oculus Quest 2.
Connect is the event that they hold, Jeff.
Yes. Yeah, I know. I was going to correct myself. I knew that much as soon as I said it. But Oculus Quest 2, thank you. It is people are getting this new headset. And it's like for some people, it's the first Oculus thing that they're getting, or it's the first Oculus thing they're getting since Facebook changed the way accounts work so that you have to connect your Oculus account to your Facebook account. So if you bought a bunch of old, you know, Oculus games on your Rift or on your first Quest, and now you're coming back to like, oh, okay, I'm going to check it out on the Quest 2. And you're like, oh, okay, you hit the screen. It's like, oh, connected to a Facebook account. If you don't have a Facebook account, you have to make one. And what's happened is for some people, I don't know how many people, but at least some are creating a Facebook account, connecting that to their Oculus account. Facebook is saying, this account is fake. We're going to delete it. And this process is unreversible. We've already looked at it. There's nothing you can do about it. And then all the purchases that they made on their previous on the Oculus account previously are now lost because they can no longer log into that account. And to this, like in response to this, you know, he might have said more, but the gist is that he's the one of the heads of Oculus now was like, just make sure you have a Facebook account in good standing before you buy an Oculus headset. Cool. And that doesn't seem like it should be the answer to this.
No.
That seems bad.
Especially for, you know, something like VR, which is like a blossoming market, to put it kindly. Like, you want to remove barriers as much as possible. So to pull this stuff and just make it more difficult or make people more apprehensive about VR, I don't know. Man, how do you feel about VR right now? Because I feel like if any year was a year where it could take off more, this year with, you know, having Half-Life Alyx finally be that quote unquote, like, you know, big breakaway game for VR, killer app, whatever you want to call it, and the pandemic and all this other stuff, you would have thought like, oh man, VR is really going to take off. And like, not really. And if not now, you know, it's not a matter of when, it's a matter of ever. Or is it just going to keep being this kind of niche thing that some people can make some money off of? Basically, companies that are already invested in tech or video games, like Sony, like Facebook. But man, I feel like you have to be very optimistic to be able to say VR is the future of gaming with a straight face anymore.
Yeah, so how I feel about it is, and I was taking out the trash on Sunday night, and I was listening to a podcast, and someone was talking about VR. No, they were talking about the Segway. And how Segway just like stopped making Segways. And I was like, oh man, VR is like the Segway. Is how I feel about it now. Do you remember what it was like before the Segway came out? Do you remember the buildup to it?
Yeah, it. What's it? What is it?
It.
Yeah, yes, I remember.
It.
Yeah.
Yes, it is coming. It's like capital I, capital T.
It's going to change everything. Yeah.
Yes. Like, and they didn't say what it was. There was a South Park episode about it.
Yeah, yeah.
it was like this, the biggest, most hypest thing, and it was going to change everything. And it comes out, and it's this little moving scooter that you stand on.
The Segway is cool.
But VR is cool too.
Yeah, like, no, exactly. That's why it's a great. Well, what's funny is that I've always said that I think VR's best application is in theme parks, and the one time I used the Segway and had fun with it was in Epcot.
Segway's best business was selling to other businesses.
Yeah.
Just like VR was like, oh, we're going to have a lot of like business applications, and that's where we're still going to, you know, thrive is like selling to businesses. Then we'll go to the consumer, or we'll give them to like, you know, their specialized employees that need VR for specialized jobs. Just like Segway went to friggin', what's the security guard movie? I can't remember.
Oh, Paul Blart. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Segway's all Paul Blart Mall Cop and like people doing tours of Epcot like I was. So yeah, no, man, that is such a good comparison. We're, you know, it's not hard to imagine something you could make a VR experience where you have to use a Segway scooter. Yeah. But like, no, I feel like the one thing that I feel like has really gotten VR right is that Void. I don't know if you've ever done a Void thing, but that's like,
I haven't, I want to, but then COVID happened.
Right. It's basically a VR
experience.
You built
me up on this. Yeah.
Right. And yeah, there's like the Star Wars one, and like a couple of them are literally at Disney. They're in like the shopping district of Disney, but
right,
they pop up in other places. And they basically have like a computer backpack, and you wear the goggles so that you run around this geometry that they created, but it all corresponds to like whatever is happening in the game. And like, that's a good use of VR. Because if I use VR, I almost want it to be an event. Like pretty much nobody's going to be like, well, it's time to play VR again. Like even Star Wars Squadrons, I played it with VR. I was like, this is amazing. This is incredible. I loved it. Haven't done it since. Cause I just don't want to, I have other things I could do that are just less of a hassle. And I don't know. Ship has sailed.
I agree. So I am, I'm like rearranging my office right now. And one of the benefits of my office, the way it was set up before, is I had a lot of space in the middle of the room where VR was very simple. And now I'm like, you know, I'm moving this desk into the corner. It's starting to encroach in that space a little bit. And now I'm thinking about like using the rest of the room, and like already I'm looking out there and like there's less space. And I'm like, do I want to like keep worrying about saving that space for doing VR once every couple of months? Or do I want to start using that space more efficiently for other things? Like just maybe putting the exercise bike in the middle of the room instead.
Sure.
And putting a TV there. And like, I'm like very big on VR, and I like VR a lot. And I have got like the Index that Valve sent.
I have an Index.
It's a
great set.
It's great. And I have the things mounted up on the wall, ready to go. And even me, I'm like, this is still kind of a pain in the ass. And even the quest, I don't even use that much when it's like, it's just the quest. It's very simple, but still like going in there and getting away. Yeah. Like we've talked about this a million times. It's just, it's such a barrier. And it isn't as life-changing as we said it was going to be before it came out. And that's just kind of the bottom line. And it kind of needed to be, if it was going to change everything, it needed to be life-changing, and it's not. So we'll see. I mean, augmented reality is clearly finding a niche, like in like the Mario Kart thing and other stuff like that. But I also don't think that's going to be as transformative as we said before either. So we'll see. You want to talk about Stadia Man?
Stadia Man. I mean, God, I don't know why I got into it with this a bit, but I think I was bored that day.
Surprised.
I was anxious about probably the PlayStation 5 and the debate and other things, but like I went off. I don't know. It was really stupid. It's a guy, he's a creative director for a studio that Stadia bought. He worked on actually like Assassin's Creed Unity, I think was the one he worked on. And he was at Ubisoft. Then he made that Journey to the Savage Planet game, which was a game that was his.
Yeah.
And he just tweeted something about, he was basically just talking about, because, you know, there's that thing going on Twitch right now where a bunch of old like archived videos and stuff are getting pulled because people are using licensed music, right? Because that was a very normal thing for most Twitch streamers, is that they just play whatever music they want. And now that's kind of like maybe coming to an end. And then this guy's take was, not, they shouldn't even worry about that, the streamers. They should be worrying about having to pay licenses for playing the games that they play on stream. Not just like paying for the game, but paying like a license to stream it. And that was a lot to take in. And he, you know, everyone, you know, obviously said it was a bad opinion, and he just doubled down very hard. And it's just annoying because, you know, like, and some people are defending him, like, oh, like, there is actually like a legal reason why they could do that. Well, okay, sure, there is,
of course,
but yeah. Like, it's such a bad, awful, stupid thing to even think about. And, you know, the legal reason is just based only on the fact that courts will likely just view video games the same way that they view movies and TVs, because they won't really understand the difference. They don't understand that video games are more, you know, there's more of a performance aspect to video games. There's, you know, the player input is a thing in video games that it isn't for a movie, unless you're doing like Mystery Science Theater 3K commentary. And even then, that's not very similar. So it's like, it's just so obviously has been a good thing for all sides, the whole streaming deal. And I know some people like to point out, like, well, maybe for, you know, these small narrative games, that's hurting sales, right? Like, people always point out there, I think the person who made that game about an old person dying, what was that called? Something about the moon? I don't know. No, you know what it was? It was actually that game about the girl who had cancer.
That dragon cancer?
Yeah. Right, and that's that. I think he said something against it once. Even then, I'm like, man, I just don't know if I buy that. You know, everybody, instead of buying that game, watch streams of it instead. Maybe people watched a lot of streams and then didn't buy it. I don't know if those people were going to buy it, but even if that was the case, that is such a small percentage compared to all the people who have bought an Overwatch or Among Us or Fall Guys or, you know, and it doesn't have to be just live service games like that. I'm sure that a lot of people watch a Ghost of Tsushima stream or something like that. So it was just a weird, dumb thing to him to say.
Yeah, and I think Michael Hartman on Twitter, and I can't remember his at right now, but I think if you look up Michael Hartman, you'll find him.
Is the lawyer guy?
He posted a thread. I'm sorry. He might be. He says that he's looked into, he's done a lot of studying of the effect of streamers and content creators on games, and he teaches a course on it. So I kind of trust his assessment. And he's like, it doesn't have a huge, like, streaming doesn't have a huge impact on most games sales. But he's like, that doesn't, like, let's put that in context. Almost nothing has a huge impact on game sales. And selling a game is so hard that even if something has a pretty minor effect on it, you need to embrace that, and you need to understand it, and you need to leverage that to your benefit. So if you're making a small indie game and you need to sell it, you better be trying to find a way to get streamers to stream it. And obviously there are the breakout hits. You listed them. But if it, like, even beyond the breakout hits, like, the smaller games are still going back to streamers and hoping to get some coverage, because of course they are. Yeah.
I mean, the thing that kind of got me is, like, it's not like everybody who's streaming games is becoming a millionaire like Ninja, right? So many people are just doing this kind of for fun, making a few bucks or whatever. But if suddenly they had to pay for the right to license, you know, Overwatch to stream, like, you know, then they're done. They're just not going to do it. Or Call of Duty,
well, I mean,
or anything like that. And what does it even mean for, like, speedrunners? Like, how are you going to license the right to play Mega Man 2? Like, it doesn't make sense.
Yeah, and like, you know, I think he might have clarified, someone else might have said this, but it was like, well, we're not talking about paying a license. We're talking about revenue sharing. And I'm like, we know how this works. Nintendo did exactly that on YouTube. They did revenue sharing. They had the Nintendo Creators Program, and they took the 70% from YouTube, and then they give you a cut of that. And so it was like, and Nintendo has stopped doing that for a reason. Fewer people. And we're getting some issues on the live stream again, people. I'm sorry, but, you know, watch the archive later if you can't hear it, or listen on the audio version. But Nintendo stopped doing that because people wouldn't play Nintendo games on YouTube anymore. It was kind of like backfiring. People that were, like, huge Nintendo creators over the years were like, it's just too much of a hassle to try to, like, get paid through the Nintendo Creators Program. That money still happens. It still works. But if I cover something else and I get, like, a fraction of the views, I'm actually making more money. And so I'm just going to do that. I'll just cover Nintendo games when I know it's going to be really, really big. And Nintendo doesn't need help on those really, really big games. They need help for the smaller stuff in between. And you know, and there's a lot of, like, strictly Nintendo creators on YouTube. And disincentivizing that in any way was just, it just didn't work. And my thought here is, if Nintendo, of all companies, cannot make revenue sharing with creators work, why would anyone else be able to? Like, Nintendo has the games that, like, people want to play the most, or at least seems to have, the most dedicated audience that would kind of go through anything just to stream their games and create content. And Nintendo related content is very popular. And so if people aren't willing to push through that for Nintendo, why would they do it for any other publisher? I don't know. I don't think they would. So,
And I mean, it's silly it's outdated.
It.
Yeah. It's silly that I almost feel silly about getting upset about it because it's just one guy's bad opinion and it got, you know, blasted on Twitter, but nobody thinks that way.
He did pick a fight with Giant Bomb though. And that was
hilarious.
It's a bad idea.
Yeah. That's ridiculous. It's funny because he was like on Giant Bomb, like last E3, like promoting Journey to the Seven. You know, there's, Google was very quick to distance themselves from it. They had a statement. Then Ryan Wyatt.
I didn't know.
Yeah, they made a statement just saying his views don't reflect ours. Then Ryan Wyatt, who's the head of YouTube Gaming, who's a nice guy. He's also from Ohio.
Good man.
I met him at a few, But he was like, he basically just made like a quote, you know, seemingly unrelated statement about how great the relationship between streamers and you know, game development. Because, I mean, like, isn't the point of Stadia or one of the points supposed to be how easy it is to stream to YouTube, right? So,
yeah.
It was a bizarre thing that that guy just suddenly floated out there. And it seems like he's had a lot of other kind of bad takes in the past. So, I don't know. Maybe we shouldn't even have given it the airtime, but...
No, I mean, it was a slow week.
So we'll
what else are we going to talk about?
Like, well, we could talk about questions. That would be fun.
There we go. All right. Let me go dive over here into Twitter. Let me refresh in case anyone else said anything new. All right. So this first one is for me. It's from Twitter user Jason Wilson. He asks, how salty is Mike Minotti today?
I'll tell you what.
Jason, he seems pretty salty, I have to say.
I'll tell you what.
Like, grumpy about his PS5 not coming. But he messed up. I don't get why he's salty about it.
I felt awful until my coworker made a very hilarious snafu.
God damn it. No!
That really perked me up. I'm feeling good now, man. I can't wait to see. I think there's been a Reddit thread already somewhere, is what I heard on chat. So we'll see about
the background. The background is blurry. Never mind. All right. Now, so to answer your question, Jason, I'm the salty one now.
Apparently, no, you're the sheepish one. More like
it. Yeah. all right. From at Cade Onder. Cade, I've never said your last.
Whoa! Wait a second. Wait a second. Metroid X88, I do not need a beer glass. The beer bottle is an acceptable vessel for a Southern Tier Warlock Imperial Pumpkin Stout. Fantastic beer, by the way, from a brewery that's based in New York, but they have other locations in Pittsburgh and Cleveland, both close to me. Very good.
Like, when you say locations, do you mean like... breweries, or do you mean like a brew pub restaurant?
I think in Pittsburgh it's a brew pub. In Cleveland, I think they actually have a full brewery. I don't know why I know so much about it, but I like
brewery. Yeah, man. I the debates were on last night, and I was really craving a beer, and I didn't have anything. And so the plan after this is to go get a beer and then just test the 3070 all weekend. All right, so more questions. Oh, wait, I never did Cade's. So Cade's question was, now that you've spent time with the Series X, do you think it will matter that it's not launching with a big exclusive like Halo? No, I think that still matters. I think they're doing a pretty decent job of building up a narrative of, if you are someone who's going to get this for Halo, Halo's still coming. So here's a bunch of other things to make you feel good about the purchase, but it's not going to make up for not having something big and exclusive at launch. No way. But And when I'm assessing the hardware, I'm trying not to think too much just about the games because everyone understands whether or not they want a game or not. And I can't tell you if you're going to be happy with the lineup or if you know the lack of a lineup is completely a deal breaker for you. If it is, you know that better than I could tell you. But let's talk about the hardware itself. The hardware is very good. They kind of did everything they need to do. It's a good overall gaming experience. Once games do start really coming out that are big and exclusive and get people really excited, this is going to be a good place to play them. And so on all those fronts, I'm feeling good about it. But not having Halo at launch, still a really big, it's a big miss.
Right. I mean, launch day exclusives have to matter, or else there never would have been any, right? Like, there's a reason why people invest in them, and it is a thing. Now, of course, like, Xbox Series X isn't going to be dead without it. You know, I'm sure it's going to launch just fine. It's going to be one of those things, though, is there going to be a narrative in a couple of months of people being like, oh, I'm just playing the same games I played on my Xbox One on this thing, and... That's slightly, and maybe that's a slightly more negative take than the PlayStation 5 one. I don't know. But, you know, it's not a make or break thing for sure. But of course it matters. Of course, everyone at Microsoft would have been a lot happier if they had Halo at launch.
Yep. From at Dolph Lundberg, any info on the 2021 Switch revision? Keep up the good work. Thank you, Dolph.
Is there info?
No, I don't have any info. Nothing yet. I think, I wish I did. But my gut tells me that it's probably coming pretty soon. And I think that,
they probably want to wait a little bit for some of the next gen console stuff to, come and go a smidge.
I think, Xbox, the Xbox News Reddit account DMs me sometimes because they're like, hey, can we use your info to make an image whatever? And I'm like, yeah, sure. And hiding Series S in plain sight, nice, is what they just sent
plain
me.
Plain sight.
It was blurry.
Wait, that wasn't a series. That was just the empty show of paper.
It was, it was a weather balloon.
And, it was a weather balloon, yeah.
Vapor clouds. It was shimmering.
It's a specter. It's Halloween.
Oh, God damn.
It was a ghoul.
I think the Switch in March makes a lot of sense, because to me, the Switch is set. It is like a made man in America. It doesn't need any more help here in America. So in Japan, which I think Nintendo still cares a lot about, it's doing very well, but it could be doing even better. And what's one way that you could do that? You release a new Switch hardware alongside a new Monster Hunter game for the Switch, and then boom, you've got you got a stew going there in Japan.
Yeah, I think that's going. Throw a bone in, you got a stew going.
Yeah, throw a bone in, you got a stew going. I think that's what they're thinking. That's me speculating. But I'm to me, it's like my gut tells me that has to be happening, but maybe not. From at Jameson, who will have their next gen or next game reveal event first? Xbox, PlayStation, or Nintendo? And what are they likely to show there?
After Fire Emblem comes out in December, whenever Hyrule Warriors is coming out, I forget. I know it's this year still. Then we're kind of back to where we were a few months ago, where it's like, we don't know anything again. So you think maybe Nintendo. I mean, we know what's coming from Microsoft and Sony for a while. It's just a matter of dates for some of those things. And I mean, everybody's going to have to do something kind of after Christmas, right? So you could, I don't know. You can almost roll a dice as far as who's first.
Yeah. I think we might not hear anything from any of them until the Game Awards. And then we might hear something from all of them. Like that night, they might all have something. I guess if it's an unannounced game, it's harder to say. Maybe Microsoft, just because I think maybe they are going to tease the initiatives thing at some point soon.
Did Nintendo possible. Do much for the Game Awards last year? Because I know they did before, because Reggie was a pretty big fan of all of that. I don't remember if Nintendo was quite as supportive of that last year. Was last year when we had Joker announced as the first DLC fighter? Or was that 2 years ago?
The year before was the Zelda Breath of the Wild 2 trailer at the Game Awards. Is that right?
Last
was that
year? E3? I thought that was an E3. No, I can't remember.
That wasn't last year. That was the year before.
I can't remember. I can't pretend to remember.
Yeah, I don't know. Chat, you can help us out if you guys can remember. I think Nintendo has. You're right. Reggie was a big part of that. But I think, even as powerful as Reggie was at Nintendo, he couldn't do it without Japan being involved, being heavily involved too, and wanting to be involved. So I still think that even without Reggie there, there's a good chance Nintendo will show up. But I mean, I know that Jeff shared that picture of him talking with Phil Spencer and Gabe Newell and some other people. And I think to me, that's clearly a Game Award conversation.
He's been doing a lot of those big Game Awards chat things with special guests. And I know Gabe Newell.
Is that what that? Okay. You think, okay.
I think Gabe Newell was a guest the one day. So.
Okay.
I don't know if I would read into that too much.
Okay. Fair enough. Then I don't know, but I think all those companies still have good relationships with Jeff and they want to be at the Game Awards. So I would be surprised if we don't see, one of those companies do something or if not all three.
Apparently last year is when they showed Bravely Default 2 and No More Heroes 3
from
Down Up Destiny. That makes sense.
Okay. Oh, right. Okay. From at Adrian O'Neill, why have we not seen any hands-on play or teardown of the Xbox Series S yet? And is it coming?
Never.
Yeah.
That console doesn't exist.
I got a good feeling that we'll be seeing something soon. I think they...
I don't know.
Shit.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, that stuff's coming. Nothing to worry about. I think they just wanted to focus on the Series X, mostly because they probably would have had a lot more Series X's standing out on the show floor at E3, and that's what they sent to us. And if they were going to have like Series S at E3, which they probably would have in the normal world, in the normal timeline, those probably would have been behind closed doors and would have been like, okay, come take a look at this. Let's explain it to you one-on-one what this thing is. And there just would have been fewer of them. They might not even have been running. They might not have gone that far because the Series X tells the story and the S is like part of that story, but it's still really all about Series X when you're trying to market the stuff. Let's see here. Okay. From at Abdul Rahman, he says, what do you think is the Xbox Series X GPU more powerful than the RTX 2080? No.
I think I would have even said no, and I don't know much about that
stuff. Yeah. It's still, I mean, the RTX 2080 is $700 and it's just a GPU. So, I mean, not to say that like, yeah, like you're getting like, whether it's close, and if you you know, there's no reason to go to PC if you love your consoles or whatever, and you're going to get a really good graphical experience with the consoles, and $500 for these really great graphical experiences is a hell of a deal if you think about it compared to a GPU. But no, the 2080s, I mean, I think once you start talking ray tracing, I can't see how the RTX 2080 wouldn't just blow them away, especially when you factor in DLSS and stuff like that. I mean, all that stuff might come to consoles, but yeah, for now, the answer is just no. But I wouldn't worry about that kind of stuff too much. Let's see if there's anything else worth answering here.
Wow, are you saying some of our questions aren't worth answering? Are you calling some people questions losers? I want everyone to know that I am a fan. Or I'm a friend of the fans. I'm a fan of the fans here. Jeff is kind of just, you know, sitting on his ivory tower, hiding next-gen consoles in the background, and I'm over here. Like, I'm you know, I'm part of
you. You just messed up, or else you would literally have a PS5 sitting there right this minute, and you would just be showing the box the whole time. What's the next
ivory
question? Your ivory console that you're going to paint
black.
I totally had one. Now I lost my play. Okay, this one, I don't want to answer all of them because this one's like, will we see Elden Ring at the Game Awards?
Oh, God, your favorite question.
And I'm like, guys, I don't know how many times I could tell you this. I don't know for sure. I think probably not, but maybe. Like, that's kind of just the answer there. I would just put yourself in a mindset where you're like, Elden Ring stuff is going to be happening in 2021, and you'll be much better off than if you think maybe there's a chance and then nothing happens this year. Because that seems like where we're headed. That seems like what's going to happen here. I wouldn't be surprised if the Game Awards comes and goes and you people are losing your mind because you were that like, this was it. This is when it was going to come and it didn't happen. Just take a deep breath and wait for 2021 and let yourself be surprised if it shows up.
How do you tell that? I expect it to be at the Game Awards.
You heard him, people. You guys should go write that story.
No, write that story. That is based off of Elden Ring
2020.
Absolutely nothing. Do not write that. Oh my God. I'm the guy who drank a warlock from Southern Tier. Don't believe me.
I think we answered all of them. Let me see. Oh, here's one that has a couple questions, and then we'll finish up and talk about what we've been playing. Mm-hmm. I've been playing mostly Hades again, but let's see. With this 8K, we already talked about that. The other question is expectations for the AMD Radeon RX 6000 announcement. I cannot talk about that because I think I just got embargoed information for that. So in terms of expectations, expect them to come. It'll be good. Last question from at Justin. I never said that. Do you expect any end of year Q4 surprises to be announced? I'm like, no,
what's
not
that
anymore,
Game
right?
Awards. But, then, no.
Right.
Wait, but stuff coming out. I feel like Fire Emblem was the last thing. We didn't really talk about that in news, but that's interesting.
Yeah. How are you feeling? I guess the big news there. Yeah, it's cool. I really like the collector's edition.
Yeah, I like the collector's edition a lot because it kind of answers that question of like, what would this game have looked like in like an actual NES packaging kind of deal? Like, I would almost rather get that than the digital version if I was going to get the game just because, you know, it's neat. Like, I don't expect like I'm going to go, you know, buy the Fire Emblem 1 and have a whole lot of fun with it right now. But I'm certainly glad that they're doing it. It's neat.
Yeah. It makes me a little frustrated because Nintendo feels like it has the power to make any one of its franchises big enough, as big as they've made Fire Emblem. And if they wanted to, they could just make Earthbound this big and all the, and like,
it's about, could, this is about Advance Wars, isn't it?
It's about Advance Wars.
This is, yeah, what, this is all about Advance Wars. Yeah. I mean,
I just, not for, I sure, just miss it so much. But no, I get it. Like, Fire Emblem has an appeal that Advance Wars doesn't have, but like, I mean, but like Mother 3, like
Mother 3 is ridiculous. I can't believe they have it. That, yeah, would be such,
and it would be, easy... I think it would be huge at this point. And like a Mother 4 would be just a mega hit. I think I totally 100% believe my gut. If they like, were like, here, we're making Mother 4, and we're, you know, doing it in a cool new art style. It's going to have the same vibe. It's coming off the Switch. You know, HD and but it's the same writing team or whatever, it would be massive. It would be a huge hit. I just, and I think they have the power to do that if they just decided to do it. And I think Fire Emblem's proof of that. I guess the other side of this coin is limited time only. Is that, it's available digitally for limited time only as well, right? Is that,
yeah, the case? I think it's for both versions. I mean, yeah, it's stupid. It's like the same thing as Mario. It's March 31st. And I wonder if this was always the plan, or the fact that the Mario 3D All-Stars was a big success emboldened them. But it's nonsense. I don't know why it has to be like this. But that's the way it is. So, you know, if you want it, better go get it when it comes out.
Yeah. I think Imran Khan, one of the guys over Kinda at funny. Kinda Funny Now. Yeah, he's been on the show a couple weeks ago. He was like, is Nintendo going out of business on April 1st, or what's going on?
It's
all
weird.
Of their games or something. Yeah, it's weird.
It's weird.
A good one. All right, Mike, let's move on to what we've been playing, and we could kind of wrap up this week a little bit, and I don't know, get to work, because we're going to be busy. I let's talk about Hades, and then maybe we'll be done talking about that until maybe Game of the Year stuff. But I finally got my first clear on it, and it felt really good. And I'd been really close before, and it was like my 30th attempt to get to escape. And in my teens, I had one where I had him down to literally, you know, that on his second form. And I'm like, oh man. And then I got pretty close one more time. And then it was like attempt number 32. And I got out. And then I went and read your story about how hard it is to quit the game. And I'm like, I am 100% totally feeling this. Cause I thought I would kind of put it down after clearing it once. And they drag you back in so hard with the story. I want to keep playing that game forever. I think it's so good.
Honestly, you should still. Cause like clearing it once is not even the end. Like, the real end is when you clear it, I think 10 times is when you kind of finish the core story. And then after that, there's an epilogue that is like, epilogue makes it seem like it's like super supplemental and not important. Also great stuff. Very good. Mm-hmm. So I played through all the epilogue stuff and finished that finally just this week. And that was a point where I was like, I want to keep playing this actually, which like shocks me, but I think I just have to stop for now. Like, and I quit cold turkey. I even wrote a story about it to kind of like, basically to kind of hold myself accountable. Cause that night I wanted to play more and I was like, no, I wrote a story. It would be embarrassing if I played more, but it's so good. It's so much fun. And you know, it's that thing with all these roguelikes where of course you're getting more powerful through all these upgrades, but you're also just becoming so familiar with everything. You're becoming so well practiced and everything that you get very good. And that feels very fun and satisfying in its own way. And I know what boons to get. I know what weapons work well with what boons. And, it was a point where I knew I was going to beat every run. But it's like, well, how far can I go? How fast can I do it? And how crazy am I going to get this one upgrade to be? I just kept having so much fun. I'm like, okay, yeah, it is time to move on. Play something else.
Yeah. It was when I realized, oh, I should always be getting the hammers because they can really make the weapons that I'm like, oh, you know, the gun is good. I imagine one day I'll beat the game with the gun, but it's probably not going to happen for a while. I'll have to get really good at it. And then I got the gun. I'm like, oh, no, now I have a rocket launcher. And now when I, you know, and now I'm firing my main attack very fast. And it's got a burst mode and I don't have to reload anymore. So I could just dodge and fire and dodge and fire and dodge and fire. Oh no. Oh, this is my first clear. I just cleared the game. Oh wow. Okay. With the gun. I was not expecting that at all.
Good.
Yeah. But it's like, I think, when I realized that, I'm like, okay, like I'm still unlocking so much more knowledge, but I've built a really strong foundation of understanding, like you said. And to be fair, that is what this genre is. It is about learning the language of the game, and the best of these games, the best of the roguelikes are they have a really complicated but eventually understandable language to them, where a very satisfying one, where it's like the more you learn, the more you can do. And sure, maybe you're carrying along some progress in some other ways, but really the progress is this vocabulary that you're building about the way the game works. And this game nails that stuff. There's a part of me that's like, each run can be different because the weapons are different, but honestly, I'm kind of getting to the same point each time. And it is more about this greater sort of learning. And so that, one run feels pretty similar to the next. And is that really great as compared to some of these other games like Dead Cells or even Spelunky, where, in one run, your build could be so crazy broken that it feels like you're on easy mode. And the next one, you could just get really unlucky and it falls apart. But that creates a greater space for possibility. And maybe that's more interesting. But while saying that, I'm like, that's maybe better if you're going to play this game for thousands of hours. If you're one of those people, I think maybe Hades is not necessarily a game that is going to be the kind of thing where someone plays it for thousands of hours.
Thousands would be a bit much.
Yeah, but like there's some people do that with like Enter the Gungeon and stuff like that. There's people who play those games that way. I've never played them that way. And because of that, I am fine. Like even Dead Cells, which I loved, I played for maybe like 100 hours. But through 100 hours, having like really consistent runs and like getting through the stuff and getting through the content and getting really familiar with each weapon, I actually probably do prefer that. And I do think I'm preferring the way that Hades handles this stuff, because I do eventually want to put it down, but I want to have a really good experience leading up to that. I think maybe Hades nails that maybe a little bit better than any game has before in the roguelite genre. So feeling really good about that one. I also was playing some Hitman 2 because I was testing some stuff.
You were too. That's funny.
And while I was playing that, I saw you come online and I saw you were playing it as well. How are you feeling about it?
I beat it.
It a lot. All right. Oh, cool. How good is that last level? I guess it might not be the last level anymore because they did.
Well, I was going to ask you about some DLC stuff, but actually, yeah. Well, it's funny because the last level, I actually got so good at that point that just playing it the one time, I basically just kind of like, I like snuck in really well. I killed both of the people just by using like chandeliers basically and never being detected. So I was actually in there for a very short amount of time. Like I almost felt like I gifted myself.
I know. I was going to ask you, like, I think, have you gone back to start doing any of the masteries for the
No, because I mean, I was still kind of just playing through the campaign right now.
Sure.
And my question, so, you know, in Hitman 2, after that, there's two DLC levels like inside the Hitman 2 quote unquote campaign. And then there's this like other mini campaign, it looks like, called Patient Zero or something. So, and I don't have to pay for that. So my question to you is, should I just play Patient Zero? Do I need to buy these two extra levels? Like what's the good stuff here?
Patient Zero is okay. I think I like that one. Okay. It's kind of like a cult thing. I think I can't remember exactly all the details. It's fun. I would just try it, especially since you don't have to pay for it, and see if it's your jam.
Sure.
But those DLC stages for Hitman 2 are very good. The bank is excellent. And what was the other one after that? I can't remember what it is, but I remember enjoying it. But I haven't spent as much time with that one. I can't remember. But yeah, I really like the bank at least. So yeah, the DLC for Hitman 2 is very good. But honestly, maybe before you do that stuff, go back and do some masteries. That is almost just as fun as playing through the campaign, seeing all the different things you can do, trying some of the escalation missions, unlocking more and more stuff so that you could start off with like really weird builds in each stage. It's just that they really nail that stuff, and it's a lot of fun. And I that's what I was started doing. It's like I was the Mumbai stage. I started just doing some mastery stuff there and unlocking more and more stuff and trying to see them. Like, you know, I haven't really just done sniper rifle killing stages. I'm going to try that.
Yeah, I've never done that.
Yeah, it's just fun to like come up with an idea and like see if you can pull it off. And you're like, man, I keep messing up, but I'm like, I want to make this work. And yeah, it's really fun.
Mumbai was fun just because of the whole like you didn't even know what the one guy looked like at first, and you had to like spot. What a fun game. Just like, and you know, I played some self games, and I generally like them usually more in the Metal Gear side, but it was super fun.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to Hitman 3 a whole bunch.
Yeah, I'm curious because like you're usually not a big story guy. Did you care about the story of Hitman, or are you basically just kind of moving on?
I was surprised that I think I found it touching. I don't remember it much anymore, but I don't remember many game stories. But I remember at the time feeling like this is surprisingly touching, and I think they do a pretty good job with it. But it wasn't like I didn't get into the lore or anything.
Obviously. No, I mean they do a good job not making it too important, at least.
Right. Yeah. It gets out of your way, and that's why, because like the real game for me is like going back and playing the same level over and over again for like a week straight, and the story doesn't really jive with that sort of with playing it that way. It doesn't really matter. It's a lot of times it's about the stories happening within the levels that have nothing to do with the overarching story.
Right. So. And you can absolutely just enjoy it that way. It doesn't matter. I asked you about your favorite levels, and I know you said that Italy kind of village, and you said that that castle at the end of two.
Go ahead.
I kind of like the levels that are almost more like smaller and enclosed. Like I still love Paris, like the whole fashion, like that
is
almost,
Paris is excellent too.
That's almost still like, I know it's like the first one almost, but that's still like the perfect level to me. I also really liked the last one in Hitman 1. That's just like that. It's like that Japanese, like CEO hospital. Yeah. I love that.
No, it's cause it's beautiful, man. That one, I want to go back and play that on Xbox Series X now. That's cause that stage is just, it's beautiful.
Really
it's
pretty.
Snow. Yeah. And it's got, technology in nature, and that's kind of a cool contrast. They do a good job of always kind of really establishing cool stages, but that's a good one. You're right. But that last stage of Hitman 2, the castle, there's just so much weird, like Illuminati stuff, like conversations you overhear in that level. It's just really fun.
Yeah.
I think any stage, any one of those stages that you spend a lot of time with, some of them are definitely not as good as others, but any of the good stages that you spend a lot of time with, and most of them are good. Once you start playing them over and over, it's hard not to fall in love with them. Cause you do build that understanding.
I'm almost interested in replaying every stage in that hardest mode. That limits how many saves you have. Cause of course I'm going to start using save files as a crutch. Cause why wouldn't I? So I almost like the idea of I can't.
Yeah, no. And doing Silent Assassin and stuff like that, trying to get those achievements are always, that's a good way to start. Cause it's it really boxes you in and forces you to figure out the stage. And then once you understand how the level's built, you can then exploit that in other ways when you're trying to do escalation missions and you have more freedom. So yeah, it's, a lot of this comes back to the way they did it as an episodic game with Hitman in 2016, because they would release a stage and you would have to spend a lot of time with it because it was the only stage available or one of two or three stages available, and playing it over and over for a month or so while waiting for the next thing to come out was really smart, really satisfying. But that's still how I play it, even now that they're coming out as a huge, one whole package. It's still fine. We don't have to talk so much about a game that came out a couple years ago.
But it's a very good game.
It's very good.
Clearly one of our favorite games of the generation.
Yeah, definitely up there. We can maybe have that conversation sometime. Hitman 3 is coming in January. We'll talk a lot about that when that happens. Guacamelee 2, I see you put down here. Tell me about it.
Yeah, so my brother was actually spending the weekend over at my place, and we were looking for something to play that was on Game Pass. That was kind of couch multiplayer. First, we tried that Darksiders Genesis game, which is kind of like the Diablo Darksiders game.
Right.
Wasn't really feeling that. It was kind of ugly. And Diablo 3 on consoles is so great because they managed to keep all the characters on the screen. It basically just feels like you're playing a next-gen Gauntlet game. This just used pure split screen, so everything was kind of hard to see. And it was just kind of dull. But then we tried Guacamelee 2. Which I remembered has support for up to four players. And Guacamelee 1's a pretty traditional Metroidvania, and this still kind of is, but it has support for multiple players, and that seems like it would be a disaster. But it was super fun. It worked surprisingly well. A lot of it because this game has some pretty decent emphasis on combat, but even the platforming, it was pretty fun to be okay, let's try to do this together now. We'd be doing a lot of countdowns and stuff like that. As long as the person's in the room with you, I think it's a lot of fun.
Yeah, that sounds interesting. I wouldn't expect that to work either. I would expect that to be a disaster. So that's
it works interesting. I assume so too. That's why I haven't checked it out before, because I liked Guacamelee 1 a lot. And this sequel came out, I think, a couple of years ago, really. But yeah, it's just a Game Pass discovery. I was this is actually great. Super funny still. Plays super well. Good stuff.
I've never played either one. I should.
Oh, really? You would like them?
Yeah, I bet I would. Yeah, that's something I'll have to check out. Did you guys like play through the whole thing, or just like an hour or two, or what?
No, I think we played through maybe like a third of it. A very good chunk, like at least a couple of hours or so. So pretty good chunk.
Do you think you guys will ever beat it, or?
I want to, but you know how things are.
AJ doesn't beat games.
My brother never beats anything. So yeah.
Yeah. So it's kind of just against the rules. Yeah.
Kind of against the rules.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. I have nothing else really. I mean, Pikmin 3 Deluxe. I think that embargo.
I actually have played with the Mario Kart thing.
Oh really?
Yeah, I did. I did get one. I haven't written about it yet because I actually got it. I must have been a second wave because I'm a scrub, and so I got it like the day it actually came out. But I mean, you know, it's neat. I think it's the ultimate Christmas gift, and that it's like, you know, this. It's like getting a kid a drone or something, right? Like, they go out, they play with it, they think it's the greatest thing ever, and they're probably not going to bother with it again, because it works, and it is neat. It's a really cool thing. If you have somebody over, you want to impress them, show them your weird Mario Kart AR thing, because it's crazy.
This is how I've heard a lot of other people talk about it. It's a toy, people use it on Christmas Day, they'll put it away, they'll show it off to friends. And that's what a lot of, honestly, that's how a lot of the toys I get for my kids end up. Yeah. A lot of them are $100 though, which is kind of.
It's a lot like that Mario Lego thing for a lot of people, I almost feel like.
I was very close to buying it, very close to getting it. And that was the thing is they love that Lego Mario thing. Unlike other toys, at least, you know, at least the younger one carries it with her everywhere. It's her favorite. She loves Mario. She was watching. She made me put on boss battles from Mario and Rabbids Kingdom, you know, with the Kingdom game, whatever. She was just watching the boss battles.
Mario plus Rabbids Kingdom. Man, I feel like I would have known the name for this game if you didn't.
I know. I could tell I messed you up. I could tell.
I have no Kingdom something. Yeah. Mario plus Rabbids something something.
Whatever. So she loves Mario. She carries that with her everywhere. And so I'm like, they would love this. They love remote control cars as well. But I know that it would be like, they would actually want to play with it pretty frequently. And I know I wouldn't. And I'd have to like get everything set up. And I'd have to get the course set up. And we'd have to have it all over our floor. And we have enough space for it, but not enough so that it's not going to be out of the way. It's going to be in the way. And I'd have to be with them because they don't really know how to do the controls yet. So I'm like, maybe if it was like $50, no question. If it was even like $80, if I can get it on sale for like $80, I'll pick it up. But at $100, I'm like, man, that is quite a bit of money especially just for one of them. So we'll have to wait and see if it goes on sale. I've got nothing else, Mike. Should we wrap this up? Uh-oh. Are you muted? Why are you muted? Why can't I hear you?
I muted myself and forgot is why. Don't worry. Let's get out of here.
Okay.
You're fine.
Cool. All right, everybody. Mike is going to tell you right now where on the internet you can find him. Go ahead, Mike.
Yeah. Zeke, first off, he does not know how a vowel will look like. But you can find me on Twitter at Tolkoto, TOLKOTO. Also, check out 90s Disney, our 90s Disney podcast. I think we're going to be having a Muppet Vision 3D episode around November 1st. So look out for that. And yeah, that's where you can find me.
You can find me in Xbox prison, where Microsoft will be putting me for breaking their rules. And I'm going to rot there for the rest of my life. No, I'll be on Twitter at Jeff Grubb. YouTube.com/Jeffrey Grubb. If you're not watching live like many of our viewers are right now, if you're listening to the audio podcast, we do this live each Friday afternoon. Follow us there, and it's a good time to get us on chat and let us know if you have any questions. And then my other podcast, How Games Make Money. I put an episode up with Chris Person last week. This is coming up Monday, Tuesday. We'll see. I have another interview coming up. It's a good one. I'll talk more about it once we get closer. You can subscribe to that wherever you find podcasts. You can also find the video versions of that on youtube.com/Jeffrey Grubb. Okay. And as always, find more from both of us at GamesBeat. If you came here because you're like you want to hear about next gen consoles, and you're asking us questions, you can find a ton of coverage on this on GamesBeat. Mike's gonna be writing about the PS5 very soon once we're allowed to do that. gamesbeat.com if you want to get any of that. Or, like you said, follow him. We'll tweet about it once we have that stuff and once we're able to. Okay, let's get out of here. Thank you for listening, everybody. We'll be back with another new episode next week. Until then, have a good one. Take care of yourself and goodbye.
Bye.